Use your brain, use that front part of your, you know, the neocortex, and go, okay, enough is enough. I'm no longer hungry for the next bite. I'm comfortable. I feel good. I know that if I want to eat, there's food everywhere around me.
The Unbeatable Mind Summit is coming soon, and I encourage you to explore the lineup of inspirational speakers for this incredible three-day event. You'll hear from leading health experts Mark Sisson and Dr. Kirk Parsley. Be inspired by Ashley Horner, Andy Stump, and Joshua Mance, all of whom I have interviewed recently on my podcast. You'll also engage your Kokoro spirit with J.P. Sears and yoga master Gary Kraskow. This event will be an experience like no other, as we intend to guide you in climbing your personal five mountains through integrated practices and exercise. You'll also immerse yourself in uncovering your why ethos with the help of certified Unbeatable Mind coaches so you can design your battle plan for 2018. Now, space is very limited, so register now before it's too late. Visit summit.unbeatablemind.com. That's summit, S-U-M-M-I-T, .unbeatablemind.com. And you can save $200 off the registration price by entering the code PODCAST200 at checkout. I sincerely hope to see you there.
Hey, this is Mark Devine with the Unbeatable Mind Podcast. Welcome back. Thanks so much for your time today. I super appreciate it. Do not take it for granted. I know there's so much vying for your attention that I really, really am humbled that you're here to listen. And we hopefully it'll be well worth your time again. If you haven't looked at our summit or thought about coming to our summit, then check it out, unbeatablemind.com/summit. It's only 6 weeks away. And we're almost sold out. So there's like 20 spots left. So, and today's guest is Mark Sisson, and he's going to be at the summit. I'm looking forward to seeing him there, and we're going to have a great chat with him today. So also, if you haven't rated the podcast, please do so at iTunes or Google Play or wherever you listen to it, because it really, really helps other people find it, especially when they're nice five-star ratings. So again, appreciate that. I'm stoked to have our guest today, Mark Sisson. Now, I've spoken to Mark a couple times in the past. He's got a new book out called The Keto Reset Diet. So we're going to talk all about ketosis, ketogenesis, what it means to be metabolically flexible. You know, how does he eat during the day, intermittent fasting, all sorts of amazing things, stuff that, you know, we've addressed here before, or I've talked about. But honestly, you know, I'm a caveman when it comes to caveman diets. I don't know all the science behind it, and I probably am getting things wrong. And I'm super stoked to get the facts from Mark. And Mark is an individual who tests things out on himself. He's very practical. He's not a scientist, you know, per se. He knows a ton, and he's self-taught in this area. He's been on the cutting edge of food fueling, I should say, and paleo diet for almost 35 years. You know, he's kind of the founder, or, you know, with Rob Wolf, I would consider him to be one of the top guys in terms of promoting paleo eating through his Primal Blueprint and his website, Mark's Daily Apple. So he really knows what he's talking about, and he's an athlete and a just all-around great guy. So super stoked to have him on here. And normally I would just introduce him and we start talking, but guess what? Yours truly started the podcast and forgot to hit the record button. So it's going to pick up in the first minute of our conversation when I looked up and I was like, oh my God, I forgot to press the record button. And there you go. You know, life of Mark Devine. Anyways, here you go. Let's cut into my podcast with Mark Sisson, and you're going to love it. Hoo-yah.
Early on, adopted the high carbohydrate paradigm of building up glycogen stores and managing those glycogen stores through training, through racing, and ultimately through the consumption of high carbohydrate drinks during the races. Did that for a bunch of years, became pretty fast, pretty fit ostensibly, but was falling apart on the inside. I was overtraining. I was not recovering appropriately. I was inflamed from the diet that I had embraced as being what I thought was healthy. And at the age of 28, just basically retired from competition at the highest level to seek true fitness and health in a way that I guess we'd call it a hack today, but I hate that term. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in finding the the ways that were the most appropriate and involve the least struggle, suffer, sacrifice, right. discipline, calorie counting, portion control, any of that stuff. It just, it didn't seem right that somebody who wanted to do the right thing would have to jump through so many hoops to be fit. So I've dedicated the last 35 years of my life to finding out ways in which we can reinvent ourselves using the gene, the genetic potential, the genetic recipe that we all have that wants us to be strong and lean and fit and expect certain inputs through diet, exercise, sleep, sun exposure, play, all sorts of inputs that create epigenetic signals that turn genes on or off. And so my mission has been to uncover these hidden genetic switches that we all have. And in so doing, offer people just lifestyle choices. There's no right or wrong answer here. This is just choices that I have determined for myself, and I know you have too, would probably be appropriate in getting you to your stated goals perhaps quicker than some of the other choices that you're making. And that's really been the through line here. I mean, the company tagline is Live Awesome. And I want people to find that space in their life where they can extract the greatest amount of enjoyment and pleasure and fulfillment from every possible moment. And whether that means being mobile because you've done great things with your physical regimen, whether it means being using your brain and being a high performance individual when it comes to using your brain, whether it means having a good attitude and a great mood and not being depressed, you know, whatever it means for you, that's kind of where I try to figure out and uncover these behavioral epigenetic factors that we can all embrace.
That's awesome. So that's all started out with running track in high school.
It all started out from running home from school because I didn't want to get the crap beat out of me by the bullies, truth be told.
So you were from Maine. You were from upstate or in Maine, right? Which is not too far from where I grew up, which is cold.
Yeah, small,
cold. Yeah, where'd you grow up? Upstate New York. North. Yeah. Yeah, like north of Albany by several hours.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, no, I went to school in the Berkshires.
I've never been to Maine, but I understand it's just a beautiful, beautiful state. But so is
yeah, you know, California. If you pick the right 2 weeks, it's an amazing state. But
exactly.
Otherwise, the weather could be pretty daunting. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, once you come to California, it's hard to go back. And that's kind of
exactly.
That's my problem. It's hard to go back. Yeah. I took my wife back to upstate New York right when we had met when I was at SEAL Team 3, you know, kind of thinking, hey, maybe we'll come back here. And I don't know if this is a subconscious thing, but it was 21 below zero when I took her back there. And we got on the plane on the way home. She goes, don't even think about asking
me. Yeah. Cross that off the list.
Cross that one off the list. Okay. So like you went and just, you almost gave us 35 year, you know, kind of span. And I wanted to slow down and go back because so many people, right, still keto and paleo, even though you and I think it's hit the kind of the forefront, I think still a ton of people think it's really a fad or a fringe thing, and they're still stuck on, especially triathletes and runners, and they're still stuck on, you know, carb loading and you know, that old way of eating. And so let's talk about what's wrong with that. Like, what was wrong with a typical endurance athlete who's like literally killing himself with their food intake and their overtraining?
Yeah, well, that's the two things. They're killing themselves with their overtraining. So they're training wrong. And I wish I could go back and do that differently because I trained in what we call the no man's land, the black hole of training, where I kept my heart between 70 and 90% of its max capacity for hours every day, for days every week, because that was where we thought literally thought you had to train it at a zone that was close to where you're going to race.
Right.
But what that did is just trained you to hurt and to be able to manage pain and would kind of tear you down over time, created a lot of stress hormones, burned through a lot of sugar, and never really fostered this amazing ability to burn fat and extract most of your energy from your stored body fat. And so
and also ruin your ability to recover quickly too.
Probably. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, so the inflammatory nature of the types of foods that I was eating, you know, grain products, lots of sugar, lots of insulin-producing type sugars, because I was taking in 600 to 1,000 grams of carbs a day. Because, you know, the thought is you cannot run out of glycogen or you'll bonk. And if you bonk, that's bad for you. Start to tear down muscle tissue. So the whole thing was based on managing glycogen and managing carbohydrate versus learning to be so good at burning fat that you didn't need to tap into those glycogen stores so much.
Mm-hmm.
So the new paradigm is kind of like, okay, how do we train the body to extract 80, 85, 90% of all caloric energy requirements from fat from while fat. We're competing at a fairly high level, and thereby unburden ourselves of having to continuously consume carbohydrate that we hope is going to turn into glucose, because for some erroneous reason, we assume that the muscles, you know, absolutely had to have glucose and the brain absolutely had to have glucose to run on. So the new paradigm is become good at burning fat, become so good at burning fat, you become what we call fat adapted, and then become keto adapted. And in the process of becoming good at burning fat, your body becomes good at making ketones. And ketones are like this amazing super fuel. It's like a superpower that we all have in our genetic recipe, but none of us, or very few of us, ever use in our lifetime because we slam so much carbohydrate down our gullet every couple of hours. Well, if you train your body to become good at burning fat, if you train your body to build the metabolic machinery to burn fat more efficiently, if you train your body to do more work without expecting extra glucose, then the body adapts by making these ketones, this kind of fuel that the brain can then use.
Is a ketone kind of like a self-produced fat, or is it something completely different than a fat?
Well, it comes from it's a byproduct of fat metabolism. So it is one of the parts when you break down a triglyceride molecule, you spin off glycerol, which by the way the body can use to make glucose. You spin off three fatty acids, which the body can burn, combust actually in the, you know, in the muscles, and that's what gets burned in the mitochondria. That's when we talk about being good at burning fat, that's what we're burning. And then one of the byproducts of that is the liver can take that same molecule and can set aside some of it and basically turn it into an alternative to glucose. And ketones are an alternative to glucose. So the brain actually works better on ketones than it does on glucose. Most people assume, oh, well, you know, the brain has to run on glucose and the brain devours a lot of energy throughout the day. So I better not cut back on my carbs because I'll have low blood sugar or low blood glucose. I'll get woozy. Yeah. I'll be moody. I won't have any energy. I'll feel like taking a nap. I want to eat a bagel at 2:30 in the afternoon to top off, you know, to bring my blood sugar back off. All these things disappear when you become fat adapted and you become good at making ketones and burning ketones in the brain.
How do we know that the brain works better with ketones versus glucose?
Oh, lots of studies have been looking at this for a long time. I mean, some of the studies go back decades, because the first real exploration into the use of ketones therapeutically was for neurological issues.
Remember that from Dr. Oh my gosh, he was at our retreat a couple of years ago, and you referenced him in your book.
D'Agostino? Dom D'Agostino?
Yeah, D'Agostino. He did a lot of research on that, right? On brain,
absolutely.
More of a therapeutic approach using ketosis.
Yeah, so it's a known quantity that the brain literally preferentially uses ketones when they're available, and performs better. The muscles actually work pretty well on ketones, although what happens, which is really interesting, once you've been in ketosis for a while, once you become keto adapted, once you've spent 6 weeks with minimal carbohydrate intake and you've kind of trained your body to be good at this, the muscles become so good at burning fat, they don't even need ketones. They just sort of spare the ketones for the brain. And you become this amazingly efficient closed system where you could literally – I'm not – suggesting people do this, but you could literally go 4, 5, 6 days without eating. And and because you have enough body fat stored on you, you take that, the body takes that fat, it makes glucose from some of the glycerol, it burns the fats in the muscle to get you through the day and even to get you through a workout without eating. And then it makes ketones, which fuel the brain. And it's so efficient. So we talk about, with the keto reset diet and with ketosis in general, we talk about the end goal is what we call metabolic flexibility. It's the ability to burn fat when it's present or when no glucose is present. It's the ability to make ketones and burn ketones. It's the ability to burn glucose to the extent that you don't create the free radical damage or the reactive oxygen species that some people would typically produce, this this inefficient burning of a fuel, if you will, and the sparing of protein, because the body will burn protein if called upon, if there's, you know, if there are no other energy substrates available. But if you become really good at this keto thing, You literally become a closed loop that burns fat, that makes ketones, that makes a little bit of glucose and burns only what it needs. And it doesn't burn protein. It spares protein.
I see. So let me stop. So if you're a glucose burner, if you're a sugar burner, and you just stop eating, like I'm going to go on a fast.
Yeah.
Then does the body then burn protein? Is it looking for protein once it can't find the glucose?
No, it does. So that gets you back to that old bodybuilder paradigm about, oh my God, I can't go more than 3 hours without eating. Otherwise my blood sugar will be low and my body will seek to get amino acids from my muscles and convert them in the liver to glucose to feed my brain.
Is that what the term catabolic means?
Yeah.
I've always wondered.
Yep. I mean, that's the picture of catabolism to a bodybuilder is, oh my gosh, if I don't carry my Tupperware around with me, and eat every couple of hours, I will waste away to nothing.
The CrossFit world has got that mindset, even with the paleo diet. I
think. Exactly. Yep. Because the paleo diet for them is more one of, which is fine, it's more one of natural foods, but a lot of times it's, quinoa and baked potatoes and, starchy tubers. Right. So they're having, they're having 350 grams of carbs a day, but they're what we would call, safe starches or healthy carbs.
Right, right. So you just pretty much answered one of the key questions I think our listeners probably have is, what's the difference between paleo diet and keto diet? And it's the paleo diet. You're still eating carbs. They're just good carbs.
Yeah. Right? No, the paleo. Right. Paleo is about cleaning up your act and eating real food and eating, getting rid of sugar, getting rid of refined grains, in many cases, getting rid of whole grains. Mm-hmm. And in its place, having meat, fish, fowl, eggs, nuts, seeds, vegetables, a little bit of fruit, some starchy tubers, but not eating the crap. Now,
and this is infinitely better than the standard American diet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're 90% of the way there.
Paleo is good. We're not coming out and saying, we're not like contradicting the paleo world and say, okay, you know what? Now paleo's out and keto's in. What we're saying is that we want to train our body to deal with ketosis because there's some significant benefits, especially for athletes and warriors and pretty much for everybody, for healing and recovery, right?
There's long-lasting benefits. So what I'm suggesting is, keto is like what we call next level shit, right? Mm-hmm. It's like I was primal, which is basically a version of paleo for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I was happy. I was, I had muscle mass that I'd worked hard for but was able to keep easily. Body fat's low. Energy was great. Sleep great. Everything was like so good. Somebody would look at me and go, well, why would you want to mess with that? Right. But as you said in the opening statement, like I'm a experimenter. I'm looking for the next thing. If there's more available in terms of how I could feel, in terms of mood elevation, in terms of productivity, I'm going to try it out. I'm going to do it. So I'd been writing about keto for decades. I wrote about it in my first book, The Primal Blueprint. I'd spent days where I'd had 20 or 30 grams of carbs, for a couple of days at a time and was keto. But, never really spent a long time in ketosis. And I thought, well, this is the experiment I'll do this year. I'll spend 2 months in ketosis and I'll see if I notice any difference. And I did. I noticed more energy. I noticed that I was able to maintain – actually, I was able to build a little bit of muscle mass, which I found really a compelling argument.
That is interesting.
Decrease in inflammation. I noticed I needed less sleep. And I'm a big sleep guy. And I thought, well, if I need a half hour or more less of sleep a night, that must be because the ketones are such a good fuel. The brain gets more work done in a shorter amount of time when it's doing that repair and rewiring and all the neural stuff that it does at night. So if you add up all these, added benefits that I got from my own spending 2 months doing what I call a reset, because I don't intend to be living this way for the rest of my life. It's just, the way somebody might do a cleanse once a year, or they might do a training program for 10K. I'm suggesting, hey, if you do a reset once a year and reset your metabolism so you increase the amount of mitochondria, you increase the efficiency of the mitochondria, you decrease inflammation, you upregulate all these enzyme systems that are really good at burning fat, so that even when you go back to eating a little bit more carbs, which in my case, there might be days when I have 120 grams of carbs, 130 grams of carbs. But and by the way, Mark, that's not a sacrifice for me. That's me being, I would suggest, indulgent. Because yeah, typically, totally. You know what I mean? It's like most days my carb intake is, I'm going to say, right around 90 to 100.
Yeah. Well, let's stop there. Let's stop there. Because I think, because you addressed this in your book, and it's, I've talked about it with my tribe before, so this isn't news to them. But generally, I think, you know, people overeat, just way too much in our society. And I think the 3 square meals a day idea leads to overeating. The portion size is too much. You know, the standard or common, you know, wisdom is that we need way more food than we actually need. So generally speaking, you know, I don't eat that much. And so I probably have 150 to 200 grams of carbs, maybe 2 to 3 times a week myself. Mm-hmm. 'Cause the rest of the time I just don't need it.
You know, right.
It's not that hungry for it.
This podcast is supported by Ample. The Ample meals aren't just protein shakes. They're complete meals, including fiber, healthy fats, as well as protein. I love Ample, and I try to have at least one a day in the morning. Now, life's crazy, and this makes eating healthy on the go so much easier. I consider it the new MRE, meal ready to eat. Just add water. You can get a 400 or 600 calorie complete meal in a bottle made from superior real food ingredients designed for optimal nutrition. It's non-GMO, no artificial crap, no gluten, no soy. Now, my friends at Ample are offering a 15% discount off your first order if you're interested in checking it out. Go to amplemeal.com and use the code UNBEATABLE15. UNBEATABLE15. Ample knows how much I love this product, and I want you to try it too. So go to amplemeal.com, use the code UNBEATABLE15 to get a discount on your order. Check it out. It's great stuff.
No, that's one of the things that we find with this keto reset is that you, and again, let's use this term again. Let's bring it up again, metabolic flexibility.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about metabolic efficiency. Mm-hmm. Being metabolically efficient means your body gets the most out of everything you eat with the least amount of waste. Now, unfortunately, most people in this country would think in terms of, I want to waste food. You know, I want to have a big engine that revs high, that burns a lot of calories, because I want to put as much food through my pie hole as I possibly can and not gain weight. People think like gluttons. They think like, okay, what's the most amount of this dessert I can have and not feel guilty or not gain weight? What's the most amount of food I can have at a meal and not gain weight? And we kind of think that way. And it's like bizarre, because that tends to get us to overeat, to feel uncomfortable after having eaten too much, but then to repeat it a meal later and on.
And that brings me back to where we started with mindset. It seems like a lot of people, it's like money. People have weird relationship with money. It's just because of belief systems. People have weird relationship with food because of belief systems that are kind of established in an early childhood, right? And so a lot of people eat food for pleasure as opposed for fueling. That's why I call it fueling instead of, you know, eating. Because eating has a lot of different ways of, there's a lot of different ways to eat. And if you have an association with pleasure, and you can enjoy it, but you know, all your meals shouldn't be for pleasure, I don't think. You know, it should be fueling your body.
Well, so, you know, I'm gonna stop you there and say every bite of food I eat, I love. I eat for pleasure, but I know when to stop. I mean, you know, it's like that rat in the cage who's hitting the button to get cocaine every, you know, the rat will keep hitting the button until he dies. Because of the pleasure. So you have to kind of use your brain, use that front part of your, you know, the neocortex and go, okay.
Enough.
Enough is enough. I'm no longer hungry for the next bite. I'm comfortable. I feel good. I know that if I want to eat, there's food everywhere around me. I mean, look, we're kind of fighting our genetic pre-wiring here, which suggests that for millions of years, food was scarce enough that we were kind of wired to overeat to be able to, and by the way, efficiently and elegantly overeat and then store the extra calories as fat. I mean, that's an amazingly cool part of being human. The problem is we're all too good at storing fat now because we're not very good at burning it off. So the other part of that equation, 1 million or 2 million or whatever years ago, was in the absence of food, which was most of the time, how can the body thrive, not just survive, but thrive on the calories that were stored in the adipose tissue. And so we have all these amazing systems. Like I said, it's like a closed loop. Like you could go 4 or 5 days, theoretically, not eat, and maintain muscle mass and be probably more alert than you are during the times during when there's a lot of food around. Mm-hmm. And you'd be undergoing autophagy, which is a process by which the cells do some house cleaning. They literally start to clean up damaged proteins and damaged fats. They start to repair damaged DNA. And all of these signals happen in the absence of food, not in the presence of food. So it's sort of interesting that a lot of the cool stuff that happens to us happens during those long periods of time when we're not eating. So one of the things that I talk about in the book, and I do myself, and now I would say not only most keto people, but most people who are really fully into paleo or primal, is a lot of us don't eat breakfast. You know, wake up in the morning, have a cup of coffee maybe, but wake up energetic because we're so good at burning fat, we don't need to top off any sugar or any glucose things. I might have my first meal at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, but between the time I wake up, 6:30, and 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll go to work. I'll get a lot of work done. I'll take a break. I'll go do a workout, sometimes a hard workout. Come back from the workout. I still don't eat. Go back to work and break at 1 o'clock and have my first meal of the day at 1 o'clock. And then have my last meal, my second and last meal at, 7 o'clock at night. So I have what we call a compressed eating window. In that 6 hour period between 1 and 7 is the only time a day that I really eat my calories. The other 18 hours, I'm letting my body repair itself. I'm letting my body access fat and ketones that are being made in the absence of a meal. And I'm literally envisioning this repair process going on, this muscle preserving, perhaps muscle building process going on as a result of being keto. And by the way, none of this is available to you if you haven't done the work, if you haven't built the metabolic machinery. If you're still a sugar burner, then you're really good at burning sugar, and that's all you're good at. Mm-hmm. So a sugar burner is good at burning sugar, which creates a lot of, again, free radical issues, free radical damage. We call them reactive oxygen species. A sugar burner is not good at burning fat. A sugar burner, when they don't eat, like if you are a sugar burner, you wake up in the morning and you don't eat breakfast and you decide I'm going to fast today, you will make a ton of ketones because your body knows how to do that. But because you haven't built the metabolic machinery to use the ketones, you will spill them out in your urine, in your breath, and people will notice it on your breath. I mean,
interesting.
Ketone breath is pretty prevalent in people who are sugar burners and then who skip a couple of meals. You walk into any, like an emergency room where somebody has a flu and hasn't eaten for a couple of days, they'll have ketone breath.
Interesting.
It's very knowledgeable. And their ketone strips, they'll give them urine strips and they'll be bright purple, or they'll test their blood ketones and it'll be 2 or 3 or 5 millimolar, which is deeply in ketosis. But that doesn't mean that it's good. That just means they're making a lot of ketones, but they haven't done the work they haven't built the metabolic machinery to be able to burn the ketones efficiently. And the brain hasn't become used to using ketones, doesn't know what to do with the ketones, and is still kind of screaming out for glucose because that's all the brain has ever depended on.
Yeah, interesting. So what you just described, I've been calling intermittent fasting, and that's generally, the way that I evolved to eat. Once I started, once I learned about bulletproof coffee, right? And so once I started doing the MCT and the fat in my coffee every morning, I had no interest in that huge egg and bacon breakfast that I used to eat. And then I found myself really not being hungry until late in the morning, so 11, 12. So I'm similar to you. So I won't eat anything from 7 p.m. until at least 11:30, and that's often 12 or 1, like you.
Yep.
So that's a big chunk of time, and it didn't take me very long to feel pretty darn comfortable with that process to where it became a permanent state. Literally like 30 to 45 days, I think.
Well, that's why. Yeah, we talk about in the book, the Keto Reset Diet. We talk about a 21-day process to stair-step you into becoming good at burning fat, to become fat-adapted. Yeah. And at the end of that period, if you're comfortable, and we actually have a midterm exam in the book, and you have to pass that exam in order to earn the right to go full keto.
But is that like a blood test or how?
No, it's not. So here's the thing. It's not a blood test. It's a how you feel test. It's can you wake up in the morning and not eat breakfast and be okay going to work? Can you wake up in the morning and go till noon without eating and not have it ruin your day?
What's the best way to determine if you're in ketogenesis or ketosis?
Well, I mean, now we talk about some clinically objective parameters. Like you can measure the amount of ketones in somebody's blood.
Yeah, but like you just said, that doesn't mean you're burning
fat. It doesn't mean you're burning fat. So that's why we have these how do you feel tests, because if you wake up in the morning and you can go if you can go till noon without eating and be completely functional and not have it and not miss a beat, I guarantee you, you're good at burning fat. You know, you've passed the test. If you can do a workout fasted and not feel ravenous right after the workout, and then again, go back to work and not have your productivity suffer or not have a headache, that's almost the definition of becoming good at burning fat. So all these are kind of, the goal is to burn fat and to become metabolically flexible. The goal isn't to win the contest of how much ketones you can put out.
Right. Got it. Interesting. But when you do that intermittent fasting, that 18 hours, are you having MCT/butter in your coffee in the morning at least? Or are you not touching?
I have a tiny bit of cream in the coffee just because I just don't like black coffee. But I don't like drinking my calories. I like chewing my calories. Right, and I would argue that when you have 200, 250 calories worth of fat in the morning, you're not really fasting. You're just you're providing a substrate for your body to use, but the point of fasting is to use your own body fat, not to just use some extraneous source of fat.
I've been tricking myself thinking I was intermittent. Yeah.
So I think people who are doing bulletproof coffee in the first part of the day aren't really intermittently fasting. They're they're not eating carbs and they're teaching their body to make ketones from the MCT oil, and there's a lot of good things that are happening. But you know, if like one of your missions is to lose weight, then that's 300 calories that your body's going to get from your cup of coffee that it's not going to get off your ass. So, this is ultimately we're trying to become good at burning our own stored body fat, and it's like that's almost the definition of being a bipedal human who can exist out in the middle of nowhere. And look, I mean, you talk about SEAL training. One of my dreams for long missions would be to have these guys be so fat adapted and keto adapted that their rations aren't these, MRE K ration kind of crap from the old days. They're high fat, MCT oil based rations that only top off the fuel, but otherwise, the guys are so well trained that they could go 4 or 5 days without eating. I'm not suggesting they do that, but if need be, they would be fully functional the same way a hunter gatherer would have been on a long hunt for a beast a million years ago.
Have you met Connor Young over at Ample yet?
No,
because he's created what I think is the new.
I know the drink. I know the product. I'm aware of it. Yeah.
Well, he's coming out in December with the keto version of Ample, which is basically high quality powdered fat protein, and the keto will have very little, not sure what percentage carbs, but obviously very low.
Yeah,
and it's like super good. I have one of these a day, and it's got pre and probiotics, all the micronutrients. It's like, to me, it's like an insurance plan.
Right,
you're going to get the micronutrients for the warrior or the warrior.
Yeah, no, it's what Soylent wishes it was.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's what Soylent wishes it were. But anyways, my point is that you hit it right on, because I called it an MRE when I first saw it. And I said, you got to come up with a keto version of this because this is what the troops need. And so I think he might have done it, but we'll see,
It's
pretty cool. But getting, getting the mindset change in the military, that'll be a guerrilla warfare thing, because it'll basically be the guys using it because they need it, not the bureaucrats, buying it necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me clear up another misperception that I think I have is are we talking about being permanently ketogenic or part-time ketogenic, or are we just saying train your body to burn fat better?
Yeah, so we're talking about training your body to burn fat better, and a method of doing that is to stay keto for a period of time. And I'm suggesting
there's no such thing then as permanent ketogenesis.
Oh my God, there's lots of people who are keto for 10 years, 15 years. Okay. There are whole sites. Luis Villasenor is a friend of mine who's a keto bodybuilder and has been for, I think, 15 years. He gets 20, 30 grams of carbs a day. And all the bodybuilding community would go, "Oh my goodness, you can't maintain muscle mass on, you can't build muscle on that. You should see how ripped this guy is." Yeah,
is there any downside to that?
Not that we know of, not yet. I mean, I'll tell you,
so long.
He'll tell you, but right now there's guys that have been doing it for 10 or 15 years who totally, you know, are totally, they're so into it that they don't want to not do it. And, you know, now, on the other hand, I exist in what I call the keto zone. So the keto zone for me is I did the work. I spent a lot of time keto. Now I'm in this place where I'm plus or minus 50 grams either side of 100 on a daily basis. So some days I'm 50 grams. Some days I'm 30 grams of carbs. Some days I'm 175 grams of carbs. But the point is, because I did the work, I don't know the difference. I don't want to measure anything. It's how do I feel? And if I feel good and I feel great, I feel the same whether I'm 50 grams over or 50 grams under that average, then who cares? Then who's counting? Yeah. Then what's the, other than how you feel, what's the metric that you want to live your life by?
Yeah, right. I mean, that gets me to this. I wanted to ask you about this awesome quote you have in your book, and I forget who first said it, but you can remind us, but keep everything in moderation, even the moderation, right?
That's probably Ben Franklin. I mean, it goes back a bunch.
Was it Ben? Yeah.
Yeah, but it you know, it's like,
who knows?
who knows who the original author of that quote is? Yeah. You know, it's like Mark, it's probably, you know what it is? It's Mark Twain, but
yeah, that sounds
it was Mark Twain that we quoted in the book, but I think it was even before that was Ben Franklin. Yeah, I mean, that was originally my 80-20 rule in the Primal Blueprint. You know, strive for perfection, strive for 100%, but if at the end of the day you come in at 80%, you're on your way.
Yeah.
Don't strive for 80% and then find out that you're at 50, right?
Yeah.
And that's a John Wooden quote, you know, try to, you know, strive for perfection, but at the end of the day,
be happy with your imperfection, especially if you're doing well at it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you flip it upside down, you know, it's 80% junk and 20%, you know, paleo or keto, then, you know, don't come crying to us.
The Halo Neurostimulation System will help you to push boundaries and to perform at your maximum capacity. Now, I'm often testing new products here at Unbeatable Mind, and Halo is the most recent that I've tested. And I felt it absolutely needed to be passed on to the tribe. It's a neurostim device that electrically stimulates the movement centers in your brain. It helps you to move better and faster through neuroplastic adaptation. It's as simple to use as downloading an app and plugging in headphones and then sticking them on your head. Use it for 20 minutes and then you go do your movement or your workout. Now Halo, the company, has graciously offered to give a discount to Unbeatable Mind listeners. If you go to haloneuro.com and at checkout use the code UNBEATABLEMIND125, which will give you $125 off a Halo Sport model. That's an unbelievable offer. So use UNBEATABLEMIND125 at haloneuro.com, haloneuro.com, to get $125 off. Very generous offer that they put together. Hope you check it out. Hoo-yah.
You know, there's a ton of fad keto diets out there. What are they missing? My sense is, you know, because this goes back to why, like, I don't recommend people do diets just because they're too rigid and then people rebound out of that and they go right back to the crap that they were eating. Is this the same thing with some of the keto diets out there? And how is, you know, how is your recommendation different than that?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of ways to do keto wrong. And there's a fair amount of ways to do keto right. I've just got one of them. But one of the things that I have a real issue with, there's a whole industry that's cropping up using fake,
exogenous ketones.
Exogenous ketones.
Yeah, I've had a few people approach me wanting me to promote exogenous ketones, and I was wondering about those. Do they really do
anything? So I use them when I'm going to do like a heavy leg day, or if I'm going to, like, I typically make a little concoction of collagen supplement and ketone supplement before I play Ultimate Frisbee every Sunday. And my point to doing that is the ketones, I know that my muscles and my brain will use the ketones preferentially. And even though it won't last the full 2 hours that I'm doing it, it'll get me a nice jump start. And I notice a difference. And then I use collagen because I'm a big fan of using collagen to repair tendons and ligaments, even more so than muscle. Anybody over the age of 35 or 40 ought to be doing a collagen supplement even more intensely than they do a protein supplement.
Okay.
Because it's really about repairing the connective tissue. That's really what falls apart when you get injured, more so than the muscle. But so I'll do the collagen supplements. You know, sometimes I'll do one if I've got a talk at, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon and I haven't eaten that day, I'll probably drink a ketone supplement before that, just because I know the brain operates really well on ketones.
So is there any risk of, you know, when you use exogenous ketones of kind of tricking or preventing your body from being able to produce its own ketones?
Yeah, well, that's the issue I have. That's why I say I would use them, because I've done the work and I know I have the metabolic machinery to burn that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if I haven't done the work and then I take exogenous ketones and I sort of trick my body, I'm not tricking my body into anything. I'm introducing ketones into the bloodstream. And so the body, which is a fairly intricate feedback loop, would, in my mind, would recognize an excess of ketones, and the body would go, well, we don't need to make any more ketones,
right?
Because there's already ketones. So I don't need to break down fat to make ketones. I don't need to even combust that much fat right now because there's so much ketones. Let's burn the ketones off first. So I could make an argument that these exogenous ketones, for someone who's trying to lose weight, who's going into doing a keto diet to lose weight, it's probably antithetical to your mission. Mm. If you really want to lose weight, you have to learn how to burn off your own stored body fat.
Right.
And the only way you do that is by first creating a deficit in the amount of carbohydrate you take in, so your body's forced to burn fat, and then by creating a caloric deficit so that your body burns your body fat and not the fat on the plate of food.
Got it. So caloric restriction and then intermittent fasting, which is...
Yeah, so it's basically... Carb restriction,
carb
is
restriction
the first thing.
Is what I meant, yeah.
Carb restriction gets you to the point where your body starts to burn fat. And early, you know, in the early stages of some of these keto programs, they would say, hey, you know, fat is great. All bets are off. As long as you cut the carbs, you can eat as much fat as you want. Mm-hmm. And so people are taking in 4,000, 4,500 calories a day worth of fat, and they're loving life. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not losing weight, but they are teaching their bodies to burn fat. Mm-hmm. And they are teaching your bodies to combust fat. So there's that. So the good news is a lot of these people who have these initial forays into keto, they don't lose weight, but they don't gain weight because mm-hmm. they're not storing excess. There's not enough mm-hmm. insulin to create the storage capacity and yeah. increase in storage in the fat cells. So the body finds ways to burn it off through uncoupling proteins and thermic right. effects and all sorts of other things that are not necessarily healthy, but they are ways the body has developed to get rid of excess energy.
Yeah. Is there an ideal percentage for, in your world, of fat, protein, and carbs, you know, for a daily, you know, intake?
It's interesting because I never like to look at it in terms of percentages.
Yeah.
What I like to look at it in terms of macros. So you start with protein and you go, okay, what are my protein requirements? Mm. If I'm a 108-pound woman who doesn't train, then my daily protein requirements are probably, you know, 40 grams. Mm. If I'm a 240-pound football player who wants to be keto and is spending a lot of time in the weight room, then maybe my daily intake is 150 grams, but mm-hmm. it's not much more than that. Mm-hmm. The body can't use much more than that in the way of protein. And particularly if you're keto, then the body becomes so good at sparing protein, it doesn't try to get rid of amino acids the way it would in a carbohydrate paradigm where you'd be literally taking in too many calories and then the body is scrambling to figure out how to dispose of the excess calories. How do I deaminate the protein and get rid of them? How do I store them as... You know, keep them in the amino acid pool, or do I pee them out, or do I put them in do I combust them in the cell? Do I send the amino acids to the liver to become glucose? What do I do with the excess sugar? Do I store it in the muscle cells? No, they're full. Do I store it in the fat cells? Well, even the fat cells have become resistant now. What do I do? It builds up so the body's always like looking at all of the signals you're giving it with the food and trying to figure out what it needs to do with that stuff. If you go back and simplify it and you say, okay, what are my protein requirements based on male, female, your age, your history, your goals, your size, you come to this range of protein intake. And like I say, it ranges from 40 grams a day to maybe a max of 150 for the most abusive, football playing, CrossFitting guy you could find.
All right. And what's like, let me say, give the reader who's not familiar with grams compared, like if I was looking at a hamburger, how many grams of protein am I looking at, or a chicken breast?
It's 25 or 30 maybe.
Okay. So 150 is a shit ton of meat.
Yeah, it's a shit ton of meat. And, you know, you have to work at it. You'd probably have to be taking supplements as well, like a protein supplement in addition to, you know, four eggs and, you know, glass of milk for breakfast. Again, a hamburger, two hamburgers for lunch, and a piece of fish or chicken for dinner, and you'd be at 150. And so people who think they have to get to 200 or 250 are just – that's just way, way overkill.
Yeah.
I mean, we say it's about 0.7 grams per pound of lean body mass.
Okay.
You know, so if you took a 240-pound – again, this I don't know why I picked this guy out, but I'm picking on him all afternoon now. He's 240 pounds, and he's a football player. But, you know, and he's probably got 200 pounds – of lean mass. Well, 200 times 0.7 is 140. So that's his max kind of protein requirements. And he doesn't need more than that. Anyway, so you start with a protein and then you say, okay, well, what's, you know, how many carbs am I going to take in based on where I want to be in terms of my keto lifestyle? If I want to be in ketosis, then for the most part, it's going to be 50 grams or less. You could be a top athlete and maybe get away with 70 grams or less on a daily basis. But let's just use 50 as sort of cutoff. Well, here we've got, let's just say we say 100 grams of protein to be conservative for most people and 50 grams of carbs. That's only 600 calories, Mark. Mm-hmm. So we make the difference up with fat. Now, 100 grams of fat, which is a lot of fat, is 900 calories. We're only at 1,500 calories here for the day.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is, because I've just basically described what you need to get by and thrive, you probably don't need more than, say, 2,000 calories a day.
Yeah,
even for an active, you know, big fella like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can get by with 2,200, 2,400, whatever, but you could also do very nicely on a day of 1,600, 1,700, 1,800 calories.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look at my day, I have a big salad for lunch, a big salad. It's got a giant bowl of, you know, mixed vegetables and whatever. It might have 25 grams of meat or fish or chicken. That'll be net grams of protein on it. And I douse it with some of my Primal Kitchen salad dressing, which is a healthy fat avocado-based dressing. End of the day, that might be 600 calories. I doubt it. It's typically 450, but it might be 600. I might have a handful of macadamia nuts later on in the afternoon. Call it 150. Now I'm at 800 calories right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then for dinner, I'll have a small piece of steak, some grilled vegetables, and a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think I get 2,000 calories a day. And for the longest time, I thought, you know, I do all of the Benedict Harris calculations and how much, you know, how old am I and how tall am I and what's my basal metabolic rate and what's my work activity and how do I factor that in and how much training am I doing? And I come up with these numbers like 2,500, 2,600, 3,000 calories a day. Bullshit. I get by on 30 or 40% fewer calories now than I ever did any time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel better. And here's the most important part. I'm not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I'm hungry, I'll eat. Damn it. You know, if I'm hungry, I will eat. But one of the best things about being keto and being fat adapted is your hunger, your appetite, your cravings dissipate. And so hunger no longer dictates how your day goes. It's amazingly empowering.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that's an amazing thing because you don't become obsessed with food or when your next meal is, you're not feeling the, you know, that insulin drop or that, you know, hormonal hunger. And you just feel like a, you know, just real steady state, you know, calmly going through the day, and you're not being driven emotionally by food swings or emotional swings, you know, based on food
needs. Exactly.
That is powerful. Very cool. So we only have a couple more minutes, but you mentioned your daily ritual. I get that. So we got a good picture now about how you eat. Now I know training is also another big, so we've talked about sleep. Sleeping's critical. Eating this way is critical, and then training. So what's your, you know, 1 minute take on training to support a metabolic flexibility diet?
Well, I mean, I first of all, I work out fasted every time. Mm-hmm. The only thing I should say, sometimes I don't, but I'll have a collagen supplement before the workout.
Right.
But it's a different kind of protein, and that I'm trying to repair tendons and ligaments. So that's my focus there. The work that I do, you know, I wrote a book, we might have talked about it on our last podcast, called Primal Endurance, which is how to truly train for endurance efficiently, become good at burning fat and not tear yourself apart. And we use the number 180 minus your age as an aerobic limit, an upper limit for training. Mm-hmm. So I'm 64. I'm supposed to train at 180 minus 64 is 116 beats a minute. I train around 120, 125 beats a minute as a max number for me. Mm-hmm. And then I lift heavy twice a week. Okay. I might do one leg day once in a while. I might, if on and off, 1 week I'll do a heavy leg day. The next week I'll do a sprint day, because I always have to carve out time for my ultimate frisbee game, where I'm truly sprinting hard for a couple of hours. So a lot of the work I do in the gym is contemplated to allow me to do that without getting injured or beat up.
Right.
And I feel like I don't train that hard, and I feel very efficient and, low body fat and high strength and strong immune system and sleep.
And getting out in the road and pounding out any mileage on the
sneakers. Oh, my God. I was a career runner. I ran 100 miles a week for 7 years.
Holy cow.
And I haven't run a mile in 15 years.
Yeah.
I'll run 6 miles in that frisbee game,
right?
You know, sprinting and changing direction and jogging back and forth. But I haven't put on, a pair of shoes to go out and run a mile for 15 years.
You know, it's interesting. I know you were in Greece recently, and I want to talk about the food there real quick. But I went over there to do this event where we rucked from Sparta to Thermopylae. We brought some vets with us who were suffering from PTS. It was an incredible event. But in the middle of this thing, so we're rucking, 20 some odd miles a day. And rucking's fine. With load, you can walk. Once you get through the first couple of days and the reality sets in, you can walk forever, even though it's uncomfortable, especially my feet. But in the middle, we threw in a couple of half marathons, and that's what worried me. I was like, holy shit, I haven't run like you. I haven't run much. And when I was in the teams, we ran all the time, long distances, short distance, medium distance.
Yep.
And I just done more of the CrossFit style 400 and 800 meter sprints the last 5 or 6 years. But I tell you what, once I got into the rhythm, it was a piece of cake. You know what I mean? So the training works, right?
You train for life.
Works. Yeah, you train for life.
Yeah, you train for life. And then if somebody throws a 10K or a half marathon you can do it.
Exactly.
You're competent.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Now, I also thought a lot about the Mediterranean diet while I was over there. Because when Greece seemed like a paleo, almost keto diet. There was a ton of fat. Maybe a little bit too heavy on the protein, and I didn't really like their meats, but those salads were just incredible, and the olive oil.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about the Mediterranean diet? And do you think those people are kind of naturally metabolically flexible just because of the diet and the
lifestyle? I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
I do too.
First of all, I do because of the quality of the food,
right.
Not just, the choices of what they put, lots of tomatoes and olives and salad and, lettuce and things like that and feta cheese and olive oil. But it's the quality of all those ingredients.
Yeah.
And then it's the small portions. If they do have, pasta or bread, it's great bread. It's great pasta. And they don't eat a lot of it.
And they're always walking everywhere.
Yeah. And they're always walking.
That's awesome. Well, I noticed it's 5. You got to get going. This has been extremely interesting. I know people are going to love it. People can learn more about you at Mark's Daily Apple, right? Is that MarksDailyApple.com?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Primal.
And the book is the Keto Reset Diet.
Keto Reset Diet.
And you could go to KetoReset.com, and you can order from your favorite purveyor of books there.
Awesome, yeah.
And I'll be down doing your summit December 1st, and very much looking forward to that.
Likewise.
It's coming right up, man.
Yeah.
And we'll have fun. We'll talk about all this stuff, and we'll go into greater depth and do a big Q&A there. It'll be good.
Awesome.
It'll all be about performance. Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. All right, Mark, thanks so much for your time. Super stoked to have you. Good luck with everything. Let us know how we can help, and we'll see you in December.
Thanks, man.
All right. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Lock and load, boys. Time to explode, boys. Make sure you get home, boys. They got your back, the pride of the fleets, the bright swinging frogmen of the UTT.
Oh. You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.